Chapter 15. "It's the machines," Nemiel said from his position on the battlements. "That's what I find most impressive. What did you say they called them again?"
"Crawlers," said Zahariel.
"Right, crawlers," nodded Nemiel. "They cut down the trees, pull out the stumps, and level the land afterwards. And all three tasks are completed by just one machine, controlled by a single rider."
"Operators," corrected Zahariel. "The men who work the machines are called operators or drivers, not riders."
"Operators, then," shrugged Nemiel. "I ask you, have you ever seen anything like it?"
Looking at the scene below them, Zahariel shared Nemiel's sense of amazement. The two of them stood on the battlements of Alderuk, gazing down at the forest. Except there was no longer very much forest left, at least not directly in their line of sight. As far as the eye could see, across the entire parcel of land below the northern slopes of the mountain, the ancient woodlands were disappearing. From their vantage point, it was difficult to pick out much detail, but the scale of the operation unfolding below them was awe-inspiring.
"If you ask me," said Nemiel, without waiting for an answer, "they look like insects. Impossibly large insects, I'll admit, but insects all the same."
Watching the machines at work, Zahariel agreed that there was something in what his cousin said. The restless activity below the mountain did put him in mind of the regimented movements of an insect colony, an image undiminished by the fact that the fortress battlements were high enough above the scene to make the people below them look like ants.
"Can you imagine how long it would take to do that much work without the machines?" asked Nemiel. "Or how many men and horses you'd need to clear that much land? I say this about the Imperials, they don't do things by halves. It's not just their warriors who are giants, their machines are as well."
Zahariel nodded his head absently in reply, his attention still riveted on the activities of the crawlers. The last few weeks had set them all reeling. By any standard, it had been the most remarkable period in the entire history of Caliban. Nearly 6 months had passed since Zahariel had become a knight. The campaign against the great beasts was over, the Knights of Lupus were dead, and Lionel Johnson had ascended to the position of Grand Master of the Order, with Luther as his second in command. All these events, however, were as nothing compared to the coming of the Imperium. The news had spread across Caliban like wildfire within hours of the first sightings of Imperial flying ships in the sky. Soon it had become known that a group of giants in black armour had come to Caliban, proclaiming themselves as envoys of the Emperor of Terror. They were called the First Legion, and they had been sent as messengers. Zahariel well remembered the moment the Imperials had come to Caliban.
"We are your brothers," the warrior who had introduced himself as Midris had said, as he and his fellows bent their knees and bowed their heads in front of the lion. "We are emissaries of the Imperium of Man, come to reunite all the lost children of humanity, now that old night is ended. We have come to restore your birthright. We have come to bring you the Emperor's wisdom."
Not all the Terrans were giants. In the aftermath of their arrival, it had become clear that the giants, or Astartes as they were called in the Terran language, had come to Caliban as the pathfinders of a larger expedition. Once it was apparent that the people of Caliban were inclined to welcome them with open arms, more normally proportioned human beings had followed in the giants' wake, like the operators responsible for the crawlers, along with the historians, interpreters, and those skilled in the arts of diplomacy. Whether giants or normal men, the Terrans were united in one thing. They all spoke glowingly of their emperor.
"I wonder what he's like," said Zahariel, apropos of nothing.
"Who?"
"The emperor," said Zahariel, feeling a thrill of anticipation run through him.
"They say he created the Astartes, and that he can read minds and perform miracles. They say he is the greatest man who ever lived. They say he is thousands of years old. They say he is immortal. What does a man like that look like?"
Earlier that morning, Imperial envoys had announced that their emperor intended to visit Caliban. He was nearby, they said, no more than 3 weeks' travel time away. With the agreement of the Order's Supreme Council, it had been decided that a landing site would be cleared for the emperor's arrival in the forests below Alderuk. The crawlers the Imperials had brought with them had been put to work, and the ever-expanding clearing below was destined to become the place where the Emperor would first set foot on Caliban. Zahariel was not alone in looking forward to the prospect of seeing the Terran Emperor in the flesh. his imminent arrival sparking most of the discussions that had taken place in knightly circles since the giant warriors had arrived. Few could credit the tales the giants told of their leader. If their stories were to be believed, the Emperor was the absolute embodiment of human perfection.
"I'd imagine he'll be at least 10 meters tall," said Nemiel sardonically. "Perhaps even 20, if his followers are anything to go by. He'll breathe fire, and his eyes will be able to shoot out deadly rays like the beasts of legend. Perhaps he'll have 2 heads, one like that of a man and one like that of a goat. How should I know what he looks like? I'm as much in the dark as you are."
"Be careful," warned Zahariel. "The Terran giants don't like it when you speak of their leader like that. You'll offend them." Like most Calibanites, Zahariel found it breathtaking that the Imperials not only had such extraordinary technology at their fingertips, but also that they seemed to take it so much for granted. Even the things his people held in common with the Terrans only served to underline the breadth of the gap between them. The Knights of Caliban were armed and armoured in the same style as the Astartes, but the motorised blades, pistols and power armour the Terrans were equipped with were demonstrably better and more effective in every aspect than the versions used on Caliban. Zahariel found the difference most visible when he compared the merits of his armour to that worn by the Astartes. Even beyond the gulf in physical stature, Astartes power armour was superior in every possible way. Zahariel's armour protected him from blows and impacts, whether from the claws of predators or the swords of men. He could even close his helm to filter out smoke or other hazards to breathing, like the deadly pollen of Caliban's sweetroot flower. In comparison, Astartes' armour offered a much higher level of protection. It gave its wearer the ability to see in absolute darkness. It allowed him to survive extremes of heat and cold that would otherwise be unthinkable. It included its own separate air supply. Equipped with this technology, the warriors of the Astartes could survive and fight in any environment, no matter how hostile. While such things seemed commonplace to the Terrans, among the people of Caliban they were regarded as little short of miraculous, even more so when it came to the wonders of Imperial medicine. A few days after the Imperials had arrived, one of the Order's supplicants had suffered an accident in training. A boy named Moniel had been practicing walking the spiral with a live blade when he had slipped, inadvertently cutting into his knee with his sword as he fell. The Order's apothecaries had successfully managed to stem the flow of blood, saving Moniel's life, but they could do nothing to save his leg. In order to prevent the flesh from turning gangrenous, the apothecaries had been forced to amputate the wounded limb. It went without saying that anyone missing a leg could no longer hope to become a knight. Ordinarily, Moniel would have been returned to the care of his family in the settlement of his birth. In this instance, however, the Imperials had intervened to ensure a happier ending. Upon hearing of Moniel's injury, a Terran apothecary had overseen his treatment, a treatment which in this case involved using esoteric methods to cause a new leg to regrow from the stump where the old leg had been amputated. Naturally, the Imperials did not call the world Caliban. The Imperials had no way of knowing what name the people before them had given to their world, nor could they know of Caliban's culture. They had learned of the knightly orders, and it had been a source of surprise and delight to both cultures that the hierarchical structure of the knightly orders was very much like the structure of the legions of the Astartes. These were strange days. Interesting times. The battle halls of Alderuk resounded daily to the clash of arms, supplicants and knights put through grueling training rituals overseen by the Astartes. Giants in black armour marched the length and breadth of the halls every day, working with the masters of the order to gauge the level of martial prowess and character of every member of the knightly brotherhood. Zahariel had fought 3 bouts already today, his skin bathed in sweat and his muscles burning with fatigue. He and Nemiel had passed everything the Astartes had put them through, pushed to the limits of their endurance.
"I thought the training for the order was hard," gasped Nemiel.
Zahariel nodded, hanging his head in exhaustion.
"If this is what it takes to be an Astartes, I'm not sure I'm up to it."
"Really?"
asked Nemiel, hauling himself erect and performing a few mock stretches.
"I think I'm about ready for another few laps. Care to join me?"
"All right,"
said Zahariel, climbing to his feet. Though a great many of the Order's warriors had filled the battle halls, Zahariel could not help but notice that it was only the younger knights and supplicants who took part in the Astartes trials. He and Nemiel were among the oldest present, and he wondered what bearing this had on the trials. Day by day, the number of boys taking part in the trials had dwindled, as only the strongest and most dedicated were allowed to pass to the next stage. What the end result of these trials would be had been kept secret, but many believed they were competing for a place within the ranks of the Astartes. Zahariel pulled at his hamstrings and stretched the muscles of his calves and thighs before shaking off the lethargy of the morning's training. "Ready?" he said, calling Nemiel's bluff. His cousin wasn't about to give him the satisfaction, and he nodded, wiping sweat-damp hair from his face. "Let's go," said Nemiel, setting off at a comfortable pace. 10 laps. Zahariel followed him, quickly catching up and settling into the pace set by his cousin. His limbs were tired, and he had pushed his body to the extreme edge of its endurance. But this contest with his cousin had been going on for as long as he could remember, and not even exhaustion would let him pass up the opportunity to compete against Nemiel. They completed the first circuit of the battle hall without too much trouble. But by the end of the fourth, both boys were tiring, and their breathing had become ragged. In the center of the hall, fresh bouts had begun under the watchful eye of the Astartes, and Zahariel noticed that their race had attracted the attention of a giant in a suit of armor more heavily ornamented than that of his brothers.
"Tired yet?" gasped Zahariel.
"Not at all," wheezed Nemiel, as they began their fifth lap.
Zahariel fought to control his breathing and ignore the pain building in his chest as he concentrated on maintaining his pace. He forced the despair at the idea of losing from his mind as irrelevant. He would not be second to Nemiel, and he would not be the first to break under the pressure of pain. The verbatim said that pain was an illusion of the senses, while despair was an illusion of the mind. Both were obstacles to overcome, and as he drew on his deepest reserves of strength, he felt a curious lightness to his flesh, as though his limbs were borne up by a wellspring of energy that he had not known he possessed. By the seventh lap, Zahariel had begun to pull ahead of Nemiel, his newfound energy allowing him to put on a spurt of speed that broke their stalemate. He heard Nemiel's labored breathing behind him, and that empowered him further. The gap between them grew wider, and Zahariel was buoyed up with the elation of victory as he cruised through the eighth and ninth laps. A second wind filled his limbs with energy, even as it seemed to sap his cousin's will. As he began the last lap, he saw Nemiel swaying back ahead of him, and he knew he could administer a final sting to his cousin's pride by lapping him. Zahariel pushed harder and faster, digging deep into the last reserves of his determination, eating up the gap between them. His cousin threw a panicked glance over his shoulder, and Zahariel wanted to laugh at the anguish he saw there. Nemiel was beaten, and that knowledge robbed him of whatever strength he had left. Zahariel surged past his cousin and reached the finish line a full 10 meters before his cousin. With the race run, he dropped to his knees, sucking in a great lungful of stale air and clutching at his burning thighs. Nemiel crossed the line with an unsteady gait, and Zahariel cried,
"It's over, cousin! Rest!"
Nemiel shook his head and passed on, and while part of Zahariel despaired at his cousin's foolish pride, another part of him admired his persistence and determination to finish what he had begun. Though he had not an ounce of strength left, Zahariel forced himself to stand and work through a series of stretches. Not to do so would result in his muscles cramping, and who knew when the Astartes would throw the next test at them. He had just finished his first set when Nemiel lurched over the line with a strangled gasp and collapsed beside him, his chest heaving and sweat pouring from him in sheets.
"You took your time," said Zahariel, an unaccustomed edge of spite in his voice.
Nemiel shook his head, unable for the moment to reply. Zahariel offered his cousin his hand and said,
"Come on, you need to stretch."
His cousin waved his hand away, gasping for air and keeping his eyes squeezed shut. Zahariel knelt down and began massaging his cousin's legs, working out the knots of tension in his muscles with hard sweeps of his fingertips.
"That hurts," cried Nemiel.
"It'll hurt more if I don't do it," pointed out Zahariel.
Nemiel bit his lip as Zahariel carried on with his ministrations, his breathing gradually becoming more even as his body began to recover from the exertions of the race. At last, Nemiel was able to sit up, and Zahariel began working the tension from his shoulders. Zahariel said nothing, seeing the wounded pride in his cousin's face and regretting the need to pile added humiliation upon him by lapping him. But Nemiel was old enough to deal with a blow to his pride. The pair of them had done the same all the years they'd known each other. Zahariel turned as he heard heavy footsteps behind him and saw the Astartes in the ornate armor.
"You run a fast race, boy," said the warrior. "What is your name?"
"Zahariel, my lord."
"Stand when you address me," commanded the warrior.
Zahariel stood and stared up into the face of the Astartes. His features were weathered and worn, though his eyes still spoke of youth. His armor was adorned with all manner of symbols that Zahariel did not recognize, and he carried a golden staff topped with a device that resembled a horned skull.
"How did you win that race?"
I just ran faster," said Zahariel.
"Yes," said the warrior. "But where did the strength come from?"
"I don't know. I just dug deep, I suppose."
"Perhaps," said the warrior, "though I suspect you do not know where you dug into. Come with me, Zahariel. I have questions for you."
Zahariel spared a glance back at Nemiel, who shrugged without interest.
"Hurry, boy," snapped the warrior, "or do your masters not teach alacrity? Sorry, my lord, but where are we going?"
"And stop calling me my lord, it irritates me."
"Then what should I call you?" asked Zahariel.
"Call me Brother Librarian Israfael."
"Then where are we going, Brother Israfael?"
"We are going elsewhere," said Israfael, "and there I shall ask the questions."
Elsewhere turned out to be one of the meditation cells where supplicants were sent to think upon whatever wrongdoing they had been deemed to have committed by the masters of the order. Each cell was a place of contemplation, with a single window where the penitent supplicant could look out over Caliban's forests and think on what he'd done.
"Have I done something wrong?" asked Zahariel, as he followed Israfael into the cell.
"Why do you think that?"
"Have you?"
"No,"
said Zahariel. "At least I don't think so."
Israfael indicated that Zahariel should sit on the stool in the center of the cell and move to the window, blocking out the meager light with the bulk of his armored body.
"Tell me, Zahariel," began Israfael, "in your short life, have you been able to do strange things?"
"Strange things?" asked Zahariel. I don't understand."
"Then let me give you an example," said Israfael. "Have objects around you moved without you having touched them? Have you seen things in dreams that have later come to pass? Or have you seen things that you cannot explain?"
Zahariel thought back to his encounter with the Beast of Endriago and his vow to keep the strangeness of its defeat to himself. The people of ancient Caliban had once burned people in possession of such powers, and he could imagine the Astartes being no less strict with such things.
"No, Brother Israfael," he said, "nothing like that."
Israfael laughed.
"You are lying, boy. I can see it as plain as day without any need for warp sight. I ask again, have you encountered any such strange things? And before you answer, remember that I will know if you lie, and you will forfeit any chance of progressing further with these trials if I decide you are less than truthful."
Zahariel looked into Israfael's eyes and knew that the Astartes was utterly serious. Israfael could have Zahariel thrown from the trials with a single word, but he wanted to win through and prove he was worthy more than anything.
"Yes," he said, "I have."
"Good," said Israfael. "I knew I sensed power in you. Go on. When was this?"
"It was when I fought the Beast of Endriago. It just happened. I don't know what it was, I swear,"
said Zahariel, the words coming out in a confessional rush. Israfael raised a hand.
"Calm down, boy. Just tell me what happened."
I'm not sure," he said. "The beast had me. It was going to kill me, and I felt something. I don't know. My hatred for the beast rise up in me."
"Then what happened?"
It was as if time had slowed, and I could see things that I couldn't before."
"Things like what?"
"I could see inside the beast," said Zahariel. "I could see its heart and skeleton. I could reach inside it as if it was some kind of ghost."
"Terracite," said Israfael. "Very rare.
You know of this? What is it?"
"It is a form of scrying," said Israfael. "The psyker uses his power to look beyond the realms of the physical and shifts part of his flesh into the warp. It is very powerful, but very dangerous. You are lucky to be alive.
Is this power evil? Asked Zahariel.
Evil? Why would you ask such a question?
People have been burned in our history for having such powers.
Israfael grunted in sympathy.
It was the same on Terra long ago. Anyone who was different was persecuted and feared, though the people who did so knew not what they were afraid of. But to answer your question, boy, no. Your power is not evil any more than a sword is evil. It is simply a tool that can be used for good or evil, depending on who swings it and why.
Will it exclude me from the trials?
No, Zahariel, said Israfael. If anything, it makes you more likely to be chosen.
Chosen? Said Zahariel. Is that what they're for? To choose who will become an Astartes?
Partly, admitted Israfael. But it is also to see if the human strain on Caliban is pure enough to warrant its inclusion as a world that our legion can recruit from over the coming years.
And is it?
Asked Zahariel, not really understanding Israfael's words, but eager to learn more of the legion and its ways.
So far, yes, said Israfael, which is good, as it would be a hard thing for the Primarch to have to abandon his world.
Primarch? Said Zahariel. What is a Primarch?
Israfael smiled indulgently at Zahariel and said,
Of course, the word will have no meaning for you, will it? Your Lord Johnson is what we know as a Primarch, one of the superhuman warriors created by the Emperor to form the genetic blueprint for the Astartes. The First Legion was created from his gene structure, and we are, in a sense, his sons. I know that much of this will make no sense to you now, but it shall in time.
You mean there are others, like the Lion? Asked Zahariel, incredulous that there could be other beings as sublime as Lionel Johnson.
Indeed, said Israfael. 19 others.
And where are they? Asked Zahariel.
Ah, said Israfael. Therein hangs a tale.
Israfael then told Zahariel the most amazing tale he had ever heard. A tale of a world torn apart by war, and of the incredible man who had united it under his eagle and lightning-stamped banner. Israfael spoke of a time thousands of years ago when mankind had spread from the cradle of its birth to the furthest corners of the galaxy. A golden age of exploration and expansion had dawned, and thousands upon thousands of worlds had been claimed by the race of man. But it had all come to a screaming, bloody end in a time of war, blood, and horror.
Some call it the Age of Strife, said the Astartes, but I prefer the term Old Night. It has a more poetic edge to it.
What had caused this monumental fall from grace Israfael did not say, but he went on to tell of an empire broken, reduced to scrabbling fragments of civilization, clinging to the edge of existence by its fingernails, scattered outposts of humanity strewn throughout the galaxy like forgotten islands in a dark and hostile ocean. Caliban, he explained, was one such outpost, a world colonized in the Golden Age and severed from the tree of humanity by the fall of Old Night. For thousands of years, the race of man had teetered on the brink of extinction, some worlds destroying themselves in feral barbarity, others falling prey to the myriad hostile alien life forms that populated the galaxy alongside humanity. Others prospered, becoming independent worlds of progress and light, beacons in the darkness to light the way for future generations of men to find them once more. Then, as the darkness of Old Night began to lift, the Emperor began to formulate his plan to weave the lost strands of humanity back into the grand tapestry of the Imperium. Israfael spoke not of the Emperor's origins, save to say that he had arisen long ago in the shadow of a war-torn land of brutal savagery and had walked among humanity for longer than any man could know. The Emperor had fought countless wars on the ravaged surface of Terra, finally conquering it with the aid of the first genetically engineered super-soldiers. They were crude things, to be sure, but they were the first proto-Astartes, which, now that Terra was his, had gone on to develop into more sophisticated creations, all of which had inexorably led to the development of the Primarchs. The Primarchs, explained Israfael, were to be 20 warriors of legend, heroes and leaders. They would be the generals who would lead the Emperor's vast armies in his grand scheme of conquest. Each one would be a mighty being, imbued with a portion of the Emperor's genius, charisma and force of personality, Each would bestride battlefields like a god unleashed, inspiring men to heights of valour undreamt of, and campaigning across the stars to ultimate victory. As Israfael told this portion of the story, Zahariel knew without doubt that Lionel Johnson was such a being. Israfael's tale took on a more sombre tone as he went on to talk of every forge on Terra churning out weapons, war machines, and materiel to supply the Emperor's armies, even as the Primarchs matured deep within the Emperor's secret laboratories. But disaster struck before the Great Crusade, as many were already dubbing this grand adventure, could even be launched. Zahariel felt his anger rise as he heard of a nefarious subterfuge that had seen the infant Primarchs stolen from Terra and cast across the stars. Some had thought this would spell the end of the Emperor's grand vision, but he had pressed on, resolute in the face of setbacks that would have crushed the spirits of a lesser man. And so the Great Crusade had launched, pacifying the planets nearest to Terra in a whirlwind campaign that saw the Astartes bloodied in wars beyond their homeworld. Having secured alliance with the priests of Mars and completed the conquest of the solar system, the Emperor turned his gaze into the great abyss of the galaxy. As the last vestiges of the storms that had kept his armies at bay for so long finally abated, he aimed his starships into the void and began the greatest endeavor undertaken in the history of humanity, the conquest of the galaxy. Zahariel thrilled to tales of conquest and battle, and his heart leapt as Israfael spoke of how the Emperor had soon been reunited with one of his lost Primarchs. Horus, as he was known, had grown into manhood on the bleak, ashen world of Chthonia, and gladly took up command of the legion of warriors that had been created from his genetic structure. Named the Lunar Wolves, Horus and his legion had fought alongside the Emperor for many years, conquering world after world, spreading further and further from Terra as the Great Crusade moved ever onwards. That brought Israfael's tale to Caliban.
"We were all set to dispatch a scout force to Caliban when we received word from the Emperor that the entire strength of our legion was to divert to this world, and that he would follow us as soon as he was able."
"Why?" asked Zahariel. "Was it because of the lion?"
"So it would seem," said Israfael, "though how the Emperor knew of his presence here is a mystery to me."
"Will it be soon?" breathed Zahariel, unable to contain his excitement at the prospect of a man as mighty as the Emperor coming to Caliban. "Will the Emperor be here soon?"
"Soon enough," said Israfael.